to be back here. I think the last time I was here was in a snowstorm, and Paul had COVID that Sunday. And and I hear he's celebrating the wedding of his daughter, and that's a great thing to do. But he leaves me with these interesting lectionary, these interesting scriptures of telling the church how to behave, right? And so it's Matthew 18 in particular is a whole structure about a whole chapter about how Christians, those who follow Jesus, should conduct themselves. And it coincides with Paul's letter to the Romans, where he has a lot of instructions for the church. So Jesus is talking about when there is trouble between people. Now, I don't know about you, but in a lot of churches that I've been in, I'm sure it's not this one, but in a lot of churches I've been, they're hotbeds for trouble, right? For some reason, people who come to church feel like it's like they've come home, which is a great thing. But you know, when your kids go out and you hope that they're on good behavior and your teachers tell them that they're wonderful kids and you think, what happens to them when they come home? You know, or you're at work all day and then when you come home, you're the one that's griping and complaining to and getting after other people. Because we feel like when we're at home, we can be ourselves and not always be on best behavior because they're going to love us anyway. Well, I think that people think that when they come to church. They're going to love us anyway. That's the job. So we can be as ornery as we want to be, especially if we're not in a good mood. Yeah? And we can say what we want to say. And when people hurt one another, we act as normal human beings. So if somebody offends me or says something that hurts me, I'm going to go to Lynette and say, do you know what they just did? And I'm going to start building my allies because I want her to tell me that, yeah, I have a right to be offended. And rather than go back to the person that offended me, I'm going to start getting my support going. Mm-hmm. Ever done that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just sort of natural reaction. You want first people to validate that was really out of line, whatever happened, and that you are the one that's been injured and in the right. And before you know it, it's going through the church like wildfire. And people who weren't engaged in the initial problem have suddenly chosen sides. This is why there's such a thing about strict don't do it. I can never get the right word. About gossip. Because gossip spreads and causes dissension. And churches happens all the time. Because we're a group of sinners who have come together and we forget that we're also followers of Jesus. When our hearts are hurt. And Jesus is saying, you can't let that happen. When somebody offends you, when somebody hurts you, when somebody steps on your toes or in some way causes some angst against you, some sin against you, your job is to go to them and in love say, that really hurt. What was going on? Why were you doing that? I don't understand. Did I do something to offend you? Is that where it came from? Or you know, were you in a bad mood? I don't know. One time when I was a pastor, way back when the Harry Potter books were coming out, and I was reading them to all my kids, and we were very excited about them. And one of my members of the church, who was fairly new and pretty, you know, on fire for Jesus, he comes in and he says, you know, that J.K. Rowling's from the devil. And, you know, I had not had a good day that day. And this poor guy just sent me over the top. And I just spewed all over him. I said, I don't know where you're hearing that from. She's writing a story about, you know, morals. It's a fantasy. People know that when they're reading it. You know, I mean, I just, you know, blasted him literally out of the room. And rarely do I let my temper get away with me, but he walked in at the wrong time. And, you know, the next day when I saw him, I had to go to him and say, I am so sorry. That was way out of line. It had nothing to do with you. It had to do with other things that I had not resolved. And, you know, while I believe that J.K. Rowling is just fine human being as can be, you know, that wasn't how I should have responded to you. And he said, and he was like, well, you know, I just hear these things and then I repeat them and I don't think them through. So thank you for the, you know. And so we were able to resolve that. But if I had not gone back to him, and especially as a pastor, if I'd not gone back to him, because it's harder for a parishioner to come to a pastor, especially somebody new in the church, what damage would that have done? You know, I mean, so the first thing we're called to do is go back to the person who has offended us, or sometimes, like in my case, who we offended. And that takes a lot of courage sometimes, to go and face somebody, to confront, to say what you said, whatever you did, caused me pain. And we often don't do it. More often than not, I think. And so that festers. And sometimes we go back to a person and they say, you know, that's your problem, not mine. You know, I don't care if it hurt you or you deserved it or you stepped in it. It was your job, you know. And so then your job is to find a couple of people that you trust and that you think this other person trusts. And go back to them a second time and say, can we work this out? Because if a sore starts festering within a congregation, it gets bigger than those two people. And it adds up over time. Because then when that person offends somebody else 2 years down the line, you say, yeah, you know what they did to me. You know, and you go right back into it. And so you take a couple of people. And it says that if still there is not a way of reconciliation, then you need to treat them. Then you tell the church and you have a church meeting, you might say. Now, it rarely gets to this big of time. Usually by that time the pastor's involved and, you know, there can be some of those other things. But if the problem is between a congregant and a pastor, it becomes even more difficult, right? I don't know what your system is in the Lutheran Church. In the Methodist Church, which I'm a pastor of, we have a district superintendent who is our supervisor, and the church doesn't hire us, they get us. You know, the bishop says, you will go to that church, and that's who they get. So they can't fire us either, which is good for the ability to preach the gospel whether they want to hear it or not. But it's frustrating for a lot of people if they don't have, if like the pastor. So they have this, there's this process that we set up that is rarely followed by a lot of churches. But the process is, you know, if you have a problem with the pastor, you go and speak to the pastor. And if that doesn't happen, I mean, if that doesn't work, then you go to what we abbreviate as the SPRC, which is the Staff Parish Relations Committee. It's kind of a personnel committee, but they don't have hiring and firing for the pastor. They can for the other staff. But their job really is to create and keep those good relationships between the pastor and the congregation. And so you go to them. They become the trusted friends. And they're supposed to sit down and be with, you know, all the two people that are having, the pastor and the person that's having the argument. And, you know, and if that person comes and complains to them first, they're supposed to say, have you spoken to the pastor? Step number one, go back and talk to the pastor. And then come to us if that's not resolved. And then if it isn't resolved through there, then they go to the district superintendent. Bring them in and, you know, if by this time it's exploded across the church, which pastor and congregation problems can happen, then they have what they call a circle, where they bring in facilitators to help everybody hear each other and find a way to resolve, all based on this passage. But the thought when Jesus said this is, you don't need to put this in the structure of what we call the discipline. What's yours? Book of Order or the
Book of Concord.
Book of Concord, yes. And, you don't need to put it down in the law of the church. You should be practicing this on yourselves all the time. Not only in church, but everywhere. So Paul comes back and talks about love in the Romans 13. And he says, don't be in debt to anyone except for the obligation to love each other. And when you do this, it fulfills all the law. Right? So I want you to think about that last person who irritated, offended, hurt you, whether in the church or out. Was your response a response of love? Generally not. At least your first response is to be outraged, to go and chat with your best friend, to sort of start to strengthen your outrage, rather than looking at that person who just came and caused you so much pain and looking at them in love and saying, I wonder what's going on in their day. I wonder why they're feeling so hateful or ornery or troublesome. Maybe it's not just their day. Maybe it's their life. You know some people who say what they think, which is usually offensive, all the time. And Paul says you're to look at them with love. And that love is not about a feeling. Love is about what you do. Romantic love is all about feeling. But after the marriage and the honeymoon, then you have to get down to the work of loving, right? Of doing the work of loving, even when the other person's not very lovable or even when you're not feeling very loving. And that's what they call for in this, is that the only obligation we have to each other, the only one, which makes it easy to remember and very hard to do, is to love each other in that way of looking at them with grace and mercy and compassion, and try to understand why are they being so ornery. To not take what they're saying to you personally, though afterwards you may have to think about it and think, well, did I deserve that? But to look at them as Jesus would and say, what hurt is going on in their lives that makes them this way? If we all did that in church as well as out, what a different world it would be. How many misunderstandings would not happen? Churches can be a place of healing and wholeness, or they can be a place of abscess. And it's really up to us, because it's the place where we get to practice being Jesus followers with each other. It's so much, we're given so much opportunity because we're all so much sinners. And we're so ornery with each other all the time. It gives us that place to practice being kind and gracious and thoughtful and clear. And not willing, I'm not talking about being nice. I don't like nice churches. Nice is where they'll say, okay, I'll just let them say anything they want to me. Nice is not what it's about. But being kind and saying, why would you say something like that to me? What's going on with you? How's your day going? To be able to sort of stand there, receive their anger, but not let it come into you, and to come back with love, with kindness. Sometimes it takes walking away and coming back if it's a little overwhelming. So Paul left me to tell you that. I have no idea why. But he, you know, he decided to have the wedding. I'm sure they scheduled the wedding around these scriptures so that he would be gone. And so I know nothing about you. You're probably all loving and kind. But that's the word of the day. I have to tell you that I preached in my home church in Wenatchee, United Methodist. The pastor was gone for 4 weeks.
Oh.
And so I had 4 weeks, and she likes themes. And I looked at the scriptures, and they were all the Old Testament scriptures. I told her I'd do Old Testament because she doesn't like to do that. And they were, you know, about Isaac and Jacob and Esau and, you know, all this kinds of, you know, stuff about where you say, why in the world would God choose that family, you know, to be our representatives? So the sermon was a normal family, an oxymoron. And I talked about dysfunction in families and .. And they had it for 4 weeks. So, you know, you only got 15 minutes. Oh, man.